prostration to the perfection of wisdom, mother of the Buddhas of three times, which is unutterable, incomprehensible, inexpressible, unborn, unceasing, the nature of space and the object of the self-cognizant primordial wisdom. Thus I have heard one time, the Blessed One was dwelling in Rajagriha on Master Vulture's mountain, together with a great assembly of monks and a great assembly of bodhisattvas. At the time, the Blessed One was absorbed in the concentration of countless aspects of phenomena called profound illumination. At that time also, the superior Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva, the great being, was looking perfectly at the practice of profound perfection of wisdom, looking perfectly at the emptiness of inherent existence, also of the five aggregates. Then through the power of Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said to the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, how should a son of the lineage train who wishes to engage in the practice of the profound perfection of wisdom? Thus he spoke, and the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, replied to the Venerable Shariputra as follows. Shariputra, whatever son or daughter of the lineage wishes to engage in the practice of the profound perfection of wisdom, should look perfectly like this. Subsequently, looking perfectly and correctly at the emptiness of inherent existence, also of the five aggregates, form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, form also is not other than the emptiness. Likewise, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, like this, all phenomena are merely empty, having no characteristic. They are not produced and do not cease. They have no defilement and no separation from defilement. They have no decrease and no increase. Therefore, Shariputra, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness. There is no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no form, no sound, no smell, no tactile object. There is no eye element, and so forth, up to no mind element, and also up to no element of mental consciousness. There is no ignorance and no exhaustion of ignorance, and so forth up to no aging and death, and no exhaustion of aging and death. Likewise, there is no suffering, origin, cessation, or path, no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Therefore, Shariputra, because there is no attainment, Bodhisattvas rely on and abide in the perfection of wisdom. Their minds have no obstruction and no fear. Passing utterly beyond perversity, they attain the final nirvana. Also, all the Buddhas who reside perfectly in the three times, having relied upon the perfection of wisdom, became manifest and complete Buddhas in the state of unsurpassed, perfect, and complete enlightenment. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, equal to the unequaled mantra, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, since it is not false, should be known as the truth. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is proclaimed. Tathayata om gate gate paragate parasam gate bodhe soha. Shariputra, a bodhisattva, a great being, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like this. Then the Blessed One arose from that concentration and said to the superior Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva, the great being, that he had spoken well. Good, good, oh Aval. It is like that, since it is like that, just as you have revealed. In that way, the profound perfection of wisdom should be practiced, and the Tathagatas will also rejoice. When the Blessed One had said this, the Venerable Shariputra, the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, and that entire circle of disciples, as well as the worldly beings, gods, humans, demigods, and spirits were delighted and highly praised what had been spoken by the Blessed One. Tatyata omkate kate parakate parasamkate bodhe swaha. Tatyata omkate kate parakate parasamkate bodhe swaha. Parasamkate bodhe swaha. Namo Guru Buddha Dharma Sangha and the great Mata Bhajana Paramita. Through the power and strength of making prostrations to you all, may these true words of ours be achieved, just as before, when by contemplating the profound meaning of the perfection of wisdom and reciting its words, Indra overcame all the harms of Maharas, non-humans, and so forth. In the same way, by our contemplating the profound meaning of perfection of wisdom and reciting its words, may all of harms towards our spiritual practices, such as Maharas, non-humans, be overcome. May they become non-existent. May they be pacified. May they be thoroughly pacified. May I beseech you to thoroughly pacify all the outer and inner obstacles of harm for the achievement of perfect enlightenment. May all kinds of indifferences, diseases, and possessing spirits be pacified. May we be separated from unfavorable conditions. And may we achieve favorable conditions and everything excellent. Through this fortune, may they be at this time. I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Supreme Sangha until enlightenment is attained. May I achieve Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings by means of gathering merit, such as by performing generosity. I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Supreme Sangha until enlightenment is attained. May I achieve Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings by means of gathering merit, such as by performing generosity. I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Supreme Sangha until enlightenment is attained. May I achieve Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings by means of gathering merit, such as by performing generosity. May all sentient beings possess happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings not be parted from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings dwell in equanimity, which is free from attachment and anger towards both near ones and distant ones. There are no great monks even in the heaven like you, the great man leader, not in this world, not even in the place of Vishwaravana, not in the finest places of heavenly palace, and not even in the four directions and the four intermediate directions. How could they be, even if you search everywhere on this surface, including mountains and forests? Salutations to Maitreya, the Dharma region, who dwells in Tushita, whose fire of great compassion burns the fuel which is anger. Light ray of transcendental wisdom removes the darkness of ignorance and liberates sentient beings from samsara. I respectfully pay homage to the Guru and protector, Reverend Manjukosha. Your intelligence shines forth like the sun, unclouded by the two obscurations. You hold a scriptural text at your heart, symbolic of the seeing of all things as they are. Those who are caught in the prison of samsara are confused in the darkness of ignorance and are overwhelmed by their suffering. Your speech with 60 melodious ways, you preach the sentient beings to whom you are compassionate as to your only child. Your proclamation of Dharma is like a roaring thunder that awakens beings from the stupor of delusions and frees them from the iron chains of their karma. You wield the stupor of delusion, hewing down suffering where its sprouts appear, clearing away the darkness of ignorance. Primordially pure, your princely body is the embodiment of the perfection of Bodhisattva, dwelling on the tenth bhumi.
I pay homage to Manjugosha, who dispels ignorance and whose body is adorned 112 adornments or marks of a Buddha. With the brilliance of your wisdom, O compassionate one, illuminate the darkness enclosing my mind. Enlighten my intelligence and wisdom so that I may gain insight into the words of the Buddha and texts that explain them. Homage to Nagarjuna, who bestowed us 100 rivers of multitude treatises, who manifested thousands waves of collection of Madhyamika texts, who is beautiful, thousand precious quality. To Shantideva, who had manifested, composed treatises and gone to the sky. You who have white eyes, knowing all objects of knowledge. You who possesses compassion for all sentient beings to achieve wholesomeness and goodness. You who possess the power of performing inconceivable activities. I respectfully prostrate to you, the Guru Manjugosha. Having smeared the ground with scented water and scattered flowers on it, this Mount Semeru, adorned with four continents, sun and moon, by offering it to the Buddha field, may all sentient beings enjoy the perfectly pure land. May you turn the wheel of Dharma that is common to both Hinayana and Mahayana, according to the minds of sentient beings and different capacity of their intellect. Yeah, now we are in the section of establishing the knowledge or wisdom that realizes ultimate truth, the emptiness as path. We will see in the following the dialogue or the debate between the realist school, especially the Vaibhasika and Svatantrika, and the Madhyamika. As I have pointed out, in accordance with the earlier ancient scholars' clarification or the explanation, the different schools, they differ in interpreting the topics or the contents of the Buddha's teaching. The topics related here is now the realization of the true truths. Not only they differ in interpreting the true truths, the objects of the two wisdom, two kinds of wisdom. Wisdom realizing the deceptive truth as they are relatively, and wisdom that realizes the ultimate truth or the ultimate reality of all the phenomena. From the viewpoint of, first we need some sort of general explanation on the difference between the the proponent, difference of interpretations between the proponent and opponent. Unless we have some sort of idea of these two different interpretations, between the two schools, two sort of the proponent and the opponent, I think it is not easy to have a clearer picture while going through the actual explanation or the actual sort of any commentaries of the root sort of verses. So as explained in both the Abhidhamma, in accordance with they differ, the Vaibhashika and the Svatantrika, the Hinayana school, they do not differ much in the way of realizing the truth or the infallible reality of the Four Noble Truths. From their viewpoint, all the four noble truths have a unique, unique features. For example, the truth of suffering. Truth of suffering refers to the content and container, the cyclic existence. Truth of suffering refers to the cyclic existence, content and container. And truth of suffering refers to that. And then that cyclic existence has a unique and ultimate feature from their viewpoint, unique ultimate sort of feature, such as suffering. Mitakva, impermanent, suffering, selflessness, and emptiness. All the Buddhist school do not differ in defining the impermanent. They do not differ in arva, defining the impermanent, although they differ in accepting that impermanent feature as a truly existent or not, that impermanent as the ultimate reality or not. They differ in these sort of aspects of the impermanent. So and then coming to the second unique feature, the suffering. They differ in interpreting, especially between the all three realists and the Madhyamika. All three Madhyamika. Among the three realists as well, I think they also differ in pointing out the definition or the characteristic of the suffering. This suffering slightly, not very greatly. And the selflessness, the emptiness, the third and fourth feature of the cyclic existence. Totally sort of, there are big difference defining the characteristic or pointing out the characteristic of the selflessness and emptiness. In Vaibhashika, their approach or their understanding of selflessness differ totally with the Madhyamika, as well as the Chittamatrans. Chittamatran's understanding of selflessness and emptiness. There are big difference there. In brief, they regard, as you can know, these four are the unique feature of the cyclic existence. They refer selflessness and the selflessness and emptiness to the aggregates themselves, not a sort of some kind of ultimate reality of the aggregates, which is not identical to the aggregates, nor which is neither identical to the emptiness, neither identical to the aggregates, nor sort of any separate from the aggregates, as advocated by the Madhyamika school. They refer the selflessness to the aggregates themselves. At that time, they think of the self to the self, what say, projected by the heretic school, as well as self projected by our egoism. So there are two features, selflessness and emptiness. Selflessness means the aggregates or the cyclic existence are selflessness, directly you can say. Aggregates or the cyclic existence are selflessness because they are devoid of the self projected. They are devoid of the self projected by the heretics. That is their understanding of selflessness. And when they sort of interpret the emptiness feature of this noble truth of suffering, they say that it is empty because it is devoid of the dirva. Because it is devoid of devoid of self, which is identical substance, which is sort of same substance or identical with the aggregates. So this is their interpretation. So because of the different interpretations of the ultimate reality of the phenomena, Four Noble Truths, for example, because of the realist, especially the Hinayanist realist and the Madhyamika school differ in pointing out the ultimate reality of the phenomena. For example, the noble truth of suffering, or noble truth of origin, or noble truth of path, or noble truth of cessation, they differ in accordance with their sort of the different levels of understanding. They differ in interpreting that. And because of that, then they differ in sort of any kasura. They differ in pointing out the different paths, the different realizations. So from the Hinayana's viewpoint, they do not accept the realization of the phenomena inherently not existence, which is known sometimes as emptiness. They do not accept that. So they do not regard that realization as a path leading the practitioners to the liberation. Because of that, they had a big dialogue or debate in sort of accepting or in any regarding or in considering the wisdom of emptiness as a liberating path or not. So that is the point there. And then likewise, the four unique features of the origin, Gyu, Kunjung, Rabje, Gen, these are very, very similar cause I do not know in English all this. And then the path of the third sort of noble truth, the noble truth of cessation, it also has a unique sort of any features. All these unique features, in accordance with the Hinayana school, they regard these unique features as a ultimate sort of reality, ultimate anikasura reality, ultimate reality of respective and the noble truths. So since, in accordance with them, the selflessness, the unique feature of sufferings, the emptiness, the unique feature of the noble truth of sort of suffering, they have a big difference of understanding that. Big difference of understanding that from the viewpoint of the Madhyamika school. And this Madhyamika has to establish the wisdom which realizes wisdom or knowledge which realizes the emptiness, means knowledge which realizes the inexpressibility. Inexpressibility. Non-true of the phenomena as well as inexpressibility. Inexpressibility of the phenomena as the liberating path. So Vipassaka now, through cultivating a direct realization of the aspects of Four Noble Truths. So that means that from the viewpoint of Hinayana school, all the sort of the followers of three yanas, all the practitioners, all three kinds of practitioners who sort of engage in their respective path, Hinayana path or Sharvakayana path or Mahayana path, when their sort of mental state and it reaches the direct realization, their respective path of seeing, their respective path of seeing, at that very moment, from their viewpoint, there's a, in that meditation session, unlike the Madhyamika, Madhyamika school, which sort of claimed that there's dual appearances, that meditative mind do not have a objective aspect as well as the subjective aspect, as well as do not have an awareness of the meditation as well, whereas in the Hinayanis would say approach, all the persons in the path of seeing or in a meditative equipoise, they do have this kind of subjective aspect and objective aspect, and then they do know the function of that. Function also, they are also aware of, or they are sort of mindful, they are some kind of mindful of the function of that realization. So they have a sort of some kind of, the apprehension of the three factors at that time, at that meditation sort of session, they do have the function, they do and they apprehend the three sort of factors. So this is big difference in interpreting the meditative equipoise, state of meditative equipoise of all the three different practitioners of the three yanas. So they say the realization of aspect of Four Noble Truths, such as impermanence and suffering, selflessness, emptiness, that is the unique feature of noble truth of suffering. And then the unique feature of noble truth of origin. Noble truth of origin refers to our anidire, the disturbing emotions, Noble Truth of Origin means origin of all suffering. The Noble Truth of Origin means origin of this suffering, the sources of suffering. They refer to the Dhruva, our disturbing emotions and the actions invoked by these emotions, or virtuous action, wholesome action, which is sort of stained with the, which is polluted with the egoism, that also fall, ordinary wholesome actions also fall in the origin of suffering, actually, because it is the noble truth of suffering, not only the lower realms, any container and the content, but also the higher realms, any the container and the contained, subsume in that noble truth of suffering. So unless we study separately the Abhidhamma, so much there, so much sort of condensed there, such as impermanent and so forth. One will be liberated from disturbing conceptions. So from their viewpoint, when one has reached the path of seeing and then realizes the unique sort of features of the Four Noble Truth, directly, then that practitioner liberates. From that on, that practitioner and he will be able to eradicate the disturbing emotions from their root step by step through sort of familiarizing in that, through habituating in that, and in direct realizations of the Four Noble Truth. So what is the point of cultivating? What is the point? Since one can overcome or get rid of the all disturbing emotions from their root through and realizing and habituating in the realization of Four Noble Truth, what is the point of cultivating or habituating, first sort of making the instilling the theoretical understanding, then any through reflection, then sort of cementing that understanding with some kind of conviction, cementing that understanding, then in the practice, during the meditation of practice, when you sort of habituate, you try to sort of rest your mind in that understanding again and again, session by session, again and again, or session by session, then you cultivate or you sort of habituate or familiarize in that vision or in that understanding. So that cultivating a vision of an understanding that does not exist as anything, just from the viewpoint, they regard, not from the viewpoint of the Madhyamika, from their sort of viewpoint, they understand the emptiness, non-existence, and explained in the Prajnaparamitayana Sutra. Prajnaparamitayana Sutra or Madhyamika text as nothing. The Hinayanist sort of school, they understand the emptiness as nothingness. Nothing, neither existent nor non-existent, non-both, and no non-both. So just Dhruva. So as emptiness. Now the answer to that sort of objection, it is necessary. The reason why the practitioners, all kinds of practitioners, in accordance with Madhyamika, even the practitioner follows the Hinayana path or Pratyeka Buddha path or Mahayana path, all the practitioners have to, from the viewpoint of Madhyamika, all the practitioners will have to sort of realize this emptiness, the emptiness interpreted by the Madhyamika school, the non-true or anakalavara, non-true or an inexpressibility, either non-true or the inexpressibility. So have to realize it is necessary. The reason why all kinds of practitioner then will have to realize, or it is necessary for, it is essential for all kinds of practitioners to behold or to realize the emptiness, either the non-true or the inexpressibility, because it is taught in the Perfection of Wisdom scripture, Prajnaparamita Sutras. The teachings belong to the second turning of the wheel in Rajagriha. So Prajnaparamita Sutra, that without the path of the wisdom that understand emptiness, not the emptiness which is the unique feature of the noble truth of suffering, but the emptiness which emptiness interpreted or emptiness sort of known as the ultimate reality of the phenomena by the Madhyamika, there will be no resultant awakening. Even a Sharvaka, even a practitioner who follows the Hinayana path, he also will have to realize that non-true of his egress, non-true of the person, himself, non-true of himself, non-true of all his egress. It is not enough just to sort of realize the egress as impermanent, just to realize the egress as suffering nature. No, it is not enough just to realize the egress as devoid of the self projected by the heretics. It is not enough just to realize the emptiness devoid of the self identical to the egress, as our egoism conceive in that way. So Madhyamika says that is not enough, whereas Hinayana school says you don't need to realize the non-true of aggregates, because aggregates exist inherently at the ultimate level. Aggregates, the particle which make of the form aggregates, and the indivisible moment of our mind, indivisible moment of our feeling, indivisible moment of our any kinds of sort of emotions that exist ultimately. So you cannot realize them as a non-true, or you cannot realize this. There's no possibility to realize them as a inexpressibility or non-true. They say that. They claim that way. Whereas Madhyamika say that unless all three kinds of practitioners realize the non-true of themselves, non-true of their personality, non-true of their aggregates, there's no any sort of alternative to transform oneself as an awakened, to transform oneself into an awakened state, enlightened state. There will be no resultant awakening. Vaibhasika, however, since the Mahayana teachings are not the word of Buddha, Mahayana teachings are not the word of Buddha, they are not established. They are not established as credible or reliable, authentic scriptural authority for us. So they don't accept the Prajnaparamita Jnana Sutra as a Buddhist teaching. Also, the scriptures related with the teaching or the doctrine related with the third turning of will, they do not accept. in their sort of, from their viewpoint, only the teaching given in the Sarnath, the first turning of the wheel. There are several sort of sections, of teaching or teachings given there. And among those sections, and then they collaborate, or they classified all the teachings into sort of three pitakas. So there are big difference in interpreting all kinds among the four major schools, especially between the Hinayana schools and the Mahayana schools. Then how are your scriptures established as credible? They are credible. They are feasible. They are feasible to be credible or reliable or authentic because they are well-known, established or well-known. The day means the scriptures of the Hinayana Sutra. Also in the Mahayana school, it is known, all the doctrines classify sometimes into Hinayana Sutra, Mahayana Sutra. And then within the Mahayana, the interpretative teaching and the definitive teachings. So in the Abhidhamma, Abhisamayalamkara, there is a section which deals about the doctrine or the teaching. There's a big presentation or the explanation on the teaching itself. So from that we will know more clearly today. Such as four Vinaya Sutra, because they means the four Vinaya Sutra, because they refer to the four Vinaya, such as four Vinaya Sutra are well known as the word of Buddha to both of us, for both of us, to you and to us also. That is why our sort of scriptures are authentic or credible. Then at first, prior to your acceptance of your tenets, your scriptures cannot have been the word of Buddha, because at that time they were not established. They were not established as the word of Buddha for you before entering into the Hina Buddhism, or before sort of having a relationship, closer spiritual sort of relationship with the Hinayana school, before you as an ordinary sort of human, then that this the four kinds of Vinaya Sutra and so forth, the Hinayana sutras wouldn't be the word of Buddha, because at that time those scriptures did not regard them as any word of Buddha, he says. As a clarification or as an answer to that, the refutation. Nevertheless, they are still credible. They means the Vinaya scriptures or the scriptures are still credible because we learn about them from a pure, unbroken lineage. Then Madhyamika, yet this reason for which you believe in your scriptures is equally applicable in the Mahayana, because we too have an unbroken lineage of teachers. Furthermore, if you accept something as true or infallible, true here doesn't mean the inherently existence. I'll talk that in the revision session. Simply because two people accept it, then you should also accept the Vedas and other non-Buddhist scriptures as true, infallible, credible scriptures. Now the answer again clarifies their stance again. Mahayana scriptures are not credible because they are disputed, because there is a sort of dispute among the followers, the Buddhist followers. Buddhist followers, there is a dispute. There are disputes among the Buddhist followers. Disputes with regard to whether the Prasanmaramadhyana Sutra or the scriptures related with the third turning real the Buddha's word or Buddha's word or not, because of the dispute, they cannot be sort of accepted as a Buddha's word, Buddha's teaching. Madhyamika now answers to that. However, since all your general scriptures are disputed, are being disputed by the non-Buddhists, all the general scriptures or Hinayana's texts are disputed by non-Buddhists, and some of the specific sort of some of the specific any treatises or the texts are being sort of disputed among the different sort of any sections of your own sort of Hinayana school. For example, Vaibhashika, there are four major sub-schools within the Vaibhashika. And then further on, there are, 18 kinds of the Hinayana schools. Among themselves, they also had a dispute, big dispute of accepting something as a valid or reliable Buddha's word or not. So some of the specific sort of treatises were being disputed among other Buddhist school. Other Buddhist school means among your other sections of the Hinayana schools. You should reject your own scriptures as a Buddha's word too. Not only rejecting the Mahayana teaching as a Buddha's word. You accept any teaching which can be classified into three scriptural categories, Tripitaka, as the word of the Buddha, according to whether the scripture discusses higher training of moral discipline. If some kind of Buddhist teaching and it explains or deals the higher training of morality as its principal topic or the content, then that scripture is regarded as the pitaka of morality, pitaka of morality. Similarly, if a teaching or the scripture deals mainly with the higher training of concentration, then that teaching is known as the pitaka of sutra. And then if the teachings deals mainly the content of the wisdom, the object of wisdom, or the characteristic of wisdom, or divisions of the wisdom, or actions of the wisdom, and then the objects of the wisdom, then it deals with all the the aggregates, all the sources of perceptions, and all 18 kinds of 18 kinds of dadus, 18 kinds of dadus, and all comes there, like Abhidharma. Then, because of that reason, it should be regarded as a pitaka of dirva, mubedene, Abhidharma. So, since you sort of classify the teachings, all the Buddha's teaching into three pitakas, from that reasoning, if this is so, since these three teachings are taught, these three trainings, higher trainings are taught in most Mahayana scriptures, such as Samdhi Nirmochana Sutra, Samadhi, Tingesikyabhitva, Samadhi, Samdhi Nirmochana Sutra. The Mahayana scriptures are therefore similar to, they also must be accepted as a Buddha's sort of word because of the reason that they also explain or deal with the three higher trainings. Why then do you not accept them as a word of Buddha? If because of your not recognizing one scripture, such as Paschimottanamita Sutra, as having the complete characteristic of Buddha's speech, you say that all Mahayana texts are corrupt. All Mahayana texts are teachings or the scriptures are not the word of, not the actual sort of word of Buddha. Then for the same reason, because one text such as the Samdhi Nirmojana Sutra is similar to your text in having all the characteristic of Buddha's speech, means containing the similar in the way, containing the higher training as a higher training as a topic or as a content. Then, having all the characteristic of Buddha's speech, why not say that all Mahayana texts were spoken by the conqueror? So it's the same reason. The same reason you should also accept that. If Mahayana texts such as the Prajnaparamita Sutras were the word of Buddha, surely the great Kashyapa, this is great Kashyapa refers to the Nyendu Sharvaka, not a Buddha Kashyapa. There was a the Sharvaka, Sharvakarva, Nyendu Sharvaka practitioner called a great Kashyapa, So surely the great Kashyapa and other Sharvaka arhats, the four destroyer, or the exalted person, exalted Sharvaka sort of such Sharvaka practitioner who have reached the enlightenment, who has reached their enlightenment, would have understood all these Mahayana texts, especially the Prajnaparamita, the contents of the Prajnaparamita Sutra. Since they did not, they cannot be the word of the Buddha. Since they did not understand, they did not have the understanding of the content of the Prajnaparamita Sutra and the other Mahayana scriptures. So the Mahayana texts, they means Mahayana texts, cannot be the word of the Buddha. That is the reason there behind. One of the reasons why the Hinayanist school, Hinayanist did not accept the Mahayana teaching as a Buddha's word. Since they are extremely profound, since the Prajnaparamita Sutra, the contents of the Prajnaparamita Sutra, as well as the content or the topic of the third turning of the wheel, are extremely profound. Even the great Kashyapa, the Sharvaka, the four destroyer, and other arhats could not fathom the depths of what was expressed in the teaching of Mahayana scriptures. Therefore, just because you do not understand the content, or the topics, who would regard this as a reason for not accepting them as the word of the Buddha? You say that the monk arhat is the root, and another reason now. You said that the monk arhat is the root of preserving Buddha's teaching. Monk arhat means arhat who are monk is the root of preserving the Buddha's teaching. But it would be hard for those whose minds still apprehend truly existent, and have not understood emptiness in terms of non-true, in terms of inexpressibility, I think. Here mainly in terms of the non-true or not truly existence of the phenomena. Hard for those whose minds still are emptiness to be monk arhats, because they could not have fully abandoned their disturbing conceptions. If the arhats, if the arhats, Sharvaka arhats, had not sort of realized the non-true of themselves, non-true of their aggregates, then they would not have relinquished all their disturbing emotions. Therefore, since they would not have abandoned suffering, they would not have eradicated or relinquished all their disturbing emotions because of not realizing the non-true of themselves, because of not realizing the non-true of their aggregates. Since they wouldn't sort of any overcome the disturbing emotions, and they would not have abandoned suffering as well. Suffering as well, it would be hard for them to have attained the state beyond nirvana, even though you regard them as having attained the state of nirvana, the enlightenment. They would not have. Now the clarification or some kind of real clarification by the Vaibhashika school. Although they do not understand the arhats, our arhats, the Sharavaka arhats, they do not understand such an emptiness interpreted or emptiness advocated by you. Such an emptiness means emptiness interpreted by Madhyamika, by you. They have attained the freedom from suffering. That is their sort of, their, what say, their thinking or their notion. They have attained a freedom from suffering because they have abandoned their disturbing conceptions, not by means of, as you said, not by means of realizing the non-true and then habituating in that non-true, non-true of self, non-true of the aggregates, non-true of the aggregates, but by means of meditating or by means of habituating, meditating upon or familiarizing himself in the understanding of the impermanence, such things as understanding of impermanence, understanding of the personal identitylessness, that is a selflessness actually, selflessness. So in accordance with the Vaibhashika, there's only one selflessness. They talk only about the selflessness of person. They do not talk about selflessness of phenomena. Because ultimately, or from the viewpoint of their ultimate analytical mind, there is the existence, truly existent of the phenomena. So they do not accept the selflessness of phenomena. Although they sort of regard the assembly or the continuum, and the self, the object of the self as a relative sort of truth, as a false or deceptive truth, kasurta, illusion, like an illusion, not existing inherently at the ultimate level, they do not regard their non-existence as a selflessness of phenomena. They do not. The Vaibhashika do not regard them as a selflessness of phenomena. So among the four schools, the Hinayana is what say tenet holders, the Vaibhashika and the Svatantrika, they accept only one kind of selflessness of person. The Mahayana, the Madhyamika, and the Chittamatran, they talk about both the selflessness of person and selflessness of phenomena. So here, such thing as impermanence and personal identityless. So they claim that all the practitioners, from their viewpoint, all the practitioners of three yanas, by means of habituating in the understanding of impermanence, in the understanding of personal identitylessness, I explained earlier. So personal identitylessness refers to the aggregates themselves, which are devoid of the self, which are devoid of the self, the permanent self projected by the heretics. So that is known as personal identitylessness here in accordance with the Vaibhashika. Madhyamika, however, because of having abandoned their misconception, do they become devoid of suffering? Because of having abandoned or relinquished their misconception, do they become devoid of suffering as soon as they attain the misconception, means the obscuration of defilements, all kinds of disturbing emotions, all kinds of defilements, abandon their all kinds of defilements, do they become devoid of suffering as soon as they attain the state of arhat, means as soon as they attain their enlightenment, their, what say, the Sharvaka's enlightenment, with remaining. This is difficult in English, because in Tibetan we have two kinds of Sharvaka for destroyer, Sharvaka arhats. Arhats, Sharvaka arhats, Sharvaka arhats. Sometimes, Lakje Tajamba. Two kinds of Sharvaka arhats. Similarly, two kinds of enlightenment as well. Two kinds of enlightenment. Enlightenment is the quality of these two kinds of persons. Lakje Nyangde. Enlightenment with remaining, enlightenment without remaining. These are the qualities of these two. And then the person, the arhat, who is still alive after having attained the enlightenment, who is still alive is known as Lakje Dajamba, arhat with the remaining. And then when that arhat sort of passes away, then his enlightenment they regard as impermanent. It's a cessation. Permanent. Cessation is enlightenment they consider to the cessation of that person. Cessation of the person's, what say, the defilements and the resultant sufferings. The cyclic existence, cessation of the cyclic existence. So that cessation, after passing away, then that cessation, I don't know where. In their view, that remains forever. It's not visible. It is not a compounded phenomena. It's known as uncompounded. And then, since there is no remaining of the suffering nature of the body, suffering nature of the aggregates, which are the result of the earlier, what say, the polluted karma, they, from their viewpoint, they regard these aggregates as not all, some of the aggregates, mainly the physical aggregates, also some feelings, some discrimination. I think some discrimination, some feeling, the consciousness also. They regard these as a result of the earlier polluted karma. So these are with the remaining of suffering. So arhat with residue is not right there. Attain the state of. I think this is talking about the quality, the attainment. So we should say that they attain the state of not arhat, they attain the state of enlightenment with the remaining, not just residue, with the remaining of suffering. Means before he dies, before the arhat dies, after having attained the enlightenment, he is with these aggregates. So with remaining means remaining of the suffering. Although those arhats have no disturbing conceptions, means no defilements, it was clearly taught that through the latent force of their previous actions, arhats such as Mudgalayana, experience suffering. So even after having attained the arhatship, those arhats had a sort of painful physical pain, mental sort of some kind of pain in them during their during their what's the during their during their during the last part of life, during their last part of life. So because of that, he says, although they are not totally freed from suffering, Vyapashka, they are not totally free from suffering. They are temporarily not freed from suffering. They are not totally freed from suffering. Not suffering of suffering. Suffering of, they are not, because of possess, still possessing the their agigrace. Their agigrace. After having attained the arahatship and before dying, since they still have their agigrace, which is the result, which is by nature a suffering. That is the meaning there. Although they are not totally freed from suffering, as soon as abandoning their disturbing emotions, as soon as abandoning the disturbing conceptions or the last parts of the last parts of the river, last parts of the subtle and the disturbing conceptions or seeds of the disturbing emotions, they will be freed when they will be freed when they leave their bodies. They will be freed totally or completely from the suffering when they leave their bodies, because they definitely do not have any craving for the aggregates of body and mind, which is the principal condition to be born again as a to be born again as in the aggregates, I think, yeah. Craving for the body and craving for mind. Nyavaralamba. Craving for this life body, craving for next sort of life's other better body. That becomes the principal sort of condition. For conditioned existence means four principles, causes to bring up the next cycle existence or next form of being. Madhyamika, yet while they still have a form of craving, that is a completely undisturbing state of confusion. This is difficult part, actually. This section is really very difficult because of two big different interpretations among the two major schools. It's really very difficult, messing up the two interpretations. So someone who the students who haven't studied the Abhidhammas, I think they will face really very big headache. They may have a big headache in going through all this. In Vaivashika's approach among the Kasugurata, the conceptual states, they classified all these states into two, the defiled state and non-defiled state. But that non-defiled state, they do not regard as an obscuration of phenomena. They do not have this term. They do not use that term. They classified the obscuration into defiled obscuration and non-defiled obscuration. That is. Whereas in the Java. And then all kinds of craving from their viewpoint, from the Vaivashika viewpoint, comes into the defiled sort of obscuration, in the defiled state, not into a non-defiled state. Whereas in the Madhyamika approach, among all our sort of conceptual states, among all the conceptual states, they any classified all our conceptual state into anirvata, defiled obscuration of defilements and obscuration of phenomena. So all kinds of craving or attachment are not known as an obscuration of phenomena, are not known as one of the three sort of roots of poisons all are not in accordance with the Madhyamika. There are some attachment, some sort of clinging or some craving, some craving. Although the desirous attachment is associated with the clinging, associated with the craving. Like our anger is also associated with the clinging. It has a mode of clinging there. When our anger arises, there is a mode of clinging there. There is a mode of attaching that as an enemy, craving that as an enemy, clinging that as an enemy, some kind of harmful thing, harmful person, or clinging that as an enemy. That anger also has a clinging mode of clinging. So, in accordance with the Madhyamika, it is more, what say, more anidra. Their interpretation is more kalavarda. There's a word, huh? More fine, subtle, or very, not only subtle.
Refined,
more refined. Their interpretation, their sort of interpretation, or their tilavarata, pointing out the actual our state, pointing out actual our state is more sort of refined because of the discerning, more, what's it, discerning intellectual state, more discerning intellectual state. So this is really, really very, very difficult to speak about and to know and to identify really the more subtle or more very fine sort of direct. While they still have a form of craving, that is a completely undisturbing state of confusion. Means that is not a disturbing emotion, that craving or clinging, that which not falls, which does not fall into the obscuration or defilement, which falls into the obscuration of phenomena. This is important. Why would they not take rebirth with aggregates contaminated by action and disturbing conceptions? They would, because the causal condition of having feelings associated with apprehension of true existence definitely produces craving. And so the Madhyamika is sort of refuting the interpretation of the Vaibhasika. The main sort of kalavara, main point of Vaibhasika, the point that the arhats, they do not any haven't, do not realize the aggregates or self as non-true. It is not necessary. They realize the aggregates as a suffering, aggregates as a suffering nature, aggregates as a any impermanence. That is enough to eradicate. That understanding, that wisdom is enough to eradicate the all kinds of disturbing emotions and then attain the freedom from the suffering. In other words, attain the enlightenment. Whereas in Madhyamika approach, they say from their viewpoint, they say this is not the right interpretation. If this were the right, then they would be in this fault. All the arhats would be in this kind of fault. Why would they not take rebirth with aggregates contaminated by actions and disturbing conceptions? Especially the dirva. Disturbing conception here refers to the obscuration of phenomena, I think, here. They would, because the causal condition of having feeling associated with the apprehension of true existence definitely produces, if they hadn't sort of realized non-true of their self, non-true of their aggregates, then they still had to have the apprehension of truly existent. So that is why, with the apprehension of true existence, definitely produces craving, and these arhat, so-called arhat, do have such feelings. Such a mind that devoid, that lacks, or that is devoid of the understanding of emptiness, non-true or inexpressibility, is a mind with object. Such a mind that devoid of understanding of emptiness must be the mind with object. It still clings some object, some kind of, it must still cling some kind of objects, unless it has the understanding of the non-true. It has to cling some kind of objects there. Although its manifested state may temporarily cease, means the disturbing emotion's manifested state may temporarily cease, they will nevertheless arise again in the same way that during the equipoise of non-discernment. This is one kind of equipoise during which there's no discrimination, there's no state, no what's manifested discrimination during that meditation. That is known as equipoise of non-discernment, not disturbing conception, not only disturbing conception. Dushe may be nyamchu. Dushe is a discrimination, discriminating sub-mind. Temporarily cease, only to rise again later. So during that meditation, there's no any rising of the manifested any discriminating sort of any mode of mental state. But when the person awakes from that any equipoise or that meditation, then later again, then all kinds of concepts, all kinds of any manifested sort of discrimination then arise in that person. So it should be like that. It must be like that, same like that. Therefore, those who wish to put an end to all suffering should meditate on emptiness. So whether someone is following a Mahayana path, or someone following a Shravaka path, or someone follows the Hinayana path, whoever follows any of the three sort of yana, in order to get rid of the cyclic existence on behalf of oneself or on behalf of others, in order to attain the liberation on behalf of oneself or on behalf of other, the practitioner really, whoever has a serious or very sort of an genuine sort of wish or aspiration, longing to get rid of, to attain the enlightenment, they should really exert effort in sort of emptiness, meditation on emptiness. That can be done only when, then step by step, that can be done only when one has the convenient understanding of emptiness, convenient understanding of the proper manner of meditating on emptiness. And to that, one need to sort of, to instill that convinced understanding, one need to sort of study, and one need to sort of contemplate on the presentation of emptiness, presentation on the manner of meditating emptiness, and so on. When one understands emptiness, compassion should arise for those who experience suffering as a result of being confused about emptiness. So this is, I think, very important in the practical pith instruction. The pith instruction in the triple perceptions or other pith instruction, especially when one gives more time in specializing in sort of undertaking the practice of meditation, on emptiness, and after doing the concluding part, the dedication, then not just then not rushing to do some kind of cooking or going outside or we do like that, huh, during the sadhana, huh? Thinking of the next program, next sort of activities, then we will rush, especially at the end of the sadhana, then we rush quite fast, spoiling all our, because the end of the sadhana is the most important part. That is to dedicate all what we have done, all what we have done during the 15 minutes or 20 minutes or 1 hour or whatever. So we rush there, thinking of the other sort of program. Thinking of the other program, we rush there and then spoil our what's it? Spoil our wholesome actions. Because dedication makes big difference. Dedication should be sort of done with some kind of relaxed state, with a relaxed state associated with the understanding of the benefit of doing the dedication, understanding of the actual dedication, and understanding of the benefit of doing the dedication. And then thereafter, before awakening, before sort of awakening before dismantling your physical position, sitting position, then you just generate compassion, seeing that, oh, this is this, because you went through all the ultimate reality. You went through all the ultimate reality. Went through five minutes or 10 minutes or 15 minutes. You were in the state of ultimate reality. And then seeing that this is the ultimate reality and all other beings, all other sort of ordinary beings are very totally ignorant of that. And because of ignorance, then all kinds of misbehaviors, all kinds of unwholesomeness, all kinds of ani karzugurata, dirvata, all kinds of illegal, all kinds of unfavorable sort of incidents. So all kinds of unfavorable incidents so arise from that ignorance. How comes? So compassion should arise for those who experience, means at the end of, before awaking, or at the end of dedication, in the middle of these two action, and we need to think of the other beings and then generate special compassion out of that understanding towards the person, people who lack that understanding, seeing that because of lacking that understanding, all kinds of these kalavara, miseries, all kinds of bad, harmful actions to themselves, to others, to themselves, to the environment, to other beings, to the environments, all kind of that comes because of that ignorant, not knowing the ultimate reality. So one can degenerate compassion like that. Then while remaining in a cyclic existence, means one who has this kind of realization of emptiness, and who have generated any genuine sort of compassionate feeling towards the suffering beings. While remaining in cyclic existence, the ordinary being may remain in the cyclic existence by the force of the good karmas and the egoism, because having not yet get rid of that egoism, we as an ordinary sort of practitioner may remain father next two or three life or four lives, next two, three, four, five, six, seven, compared to what's never ending. It's good only to be born for 16 times or 20 times. It's fine, huh? So remain in cyclic existence. There are many ways of remaining in cyclic. For the ordinary, remain in the cyclic existence by the force of, under the control of the egos and the karmas. Whereas the exalted Bodhisattva, they remain in the cycle existence. In another word, they intentionally, out of compassion, take birth as a human, as a female, as a male, as a leader, as a servant, as a leader of the monkey. There are some leaders of the monkey. I think they are Bodhisattva leading those monkeys. As a leader of ant or some, there may be many Bodhisattvas. Really, there may be many Bodhisattvas. So they take voluntarily. From what causes? From the Maripajagisa. We call this Maripajagisa, the ground of the tendency of ignorance in their mental stream. Samigile, the uncontaminated actions. Because after realizing directly the emptiness or the selflessness, from that on, when the Bodhisattva sort of perform actions, not all, but perform actions with some kind of intention associated with understanding, associated or rooted in that understanding, rooted in that realization. Simba, zi simba. Zi simba, I think in English I haven't found that. Zi simba. It's not what says chungde, but it's zi simba. It's sort of, which have some kind of influence of intention or the action which have some kind of influence of that direct realization. There, those actions become uncontaminated action. So through that uncontaminated karma or the deed or action, and through his what's called the ground of the tendency of ignorant, through the uncontaminated Maripajagasa Samigile, and because of these two conditions, because of these two causes, intentionally, then he takes birth in any kinds of form in order to remain in cycle existence to help the other beings. So he's talking here like this. While remaining in cycle existence and accomplishing inconceivable benefit for others by means of liberating them from the two extremes, by means of liberating the sentient beings from two extremes, extreme of desiring happiness of cycle existence and extreme of fearing the different sufferings, present and future, and different sufferings, extreme of fearing sufferings of this cycle existence. So they remain in the Dhravatirava cycle existence to benefit in that way. So that is the fruit of meditating on emptiness. So meditating on emptiness naturally liberates oneself, and then also meditation on emptiness then sort of, for example, for the Bodhisattva, they become a powerful, they become more sort of anikalavara powerful in helping the others. As a byproduct, they can get rid of from their suffering, from their disturbing emotion. They didn't sort of work by thinking to get rid of their future sufferings. The getting rid of from one's own disturbing emotion and then getting freedom from the different kinds of suffering, that is a byproduct of the practice. So seeing the many, many sort of beneficials, instead of following the Vaibhashikas and approach or thought, the Madhyamika school sort of recommends the followers to put exert in meditation on emptiness, the non-true or the inaccessibility. The remedy for the darkness of obscuration of disturbing conception as well as the obscuration toward the knowable is meditation on emptiness. Without emptiness, even though one will be able to suppress the disturbing emotions, there's no any antidote other than the understanding of emptiness or habituating in emptiness, which can eradicate or which can uproot the disturbing or the obscurations from their root within our mental stream. So seeing that, therefore, why do those who wish to quickly obtain omniscience not meditate on emptiness? Since understanding emptiness has such advantages and benefits, not understanding emptiness has such disadvantages, it is incorrect to criticize. It is quite invalid. It is incorrect, mithyaba. It is totally, it is absolutely, senseless. It is absolutely senseless to criticize the direction of emptiness or the emptiness and advocated by the Madhyamika. Therefore, without any doubt as to whether it is the path of Buddha or not, whether this understanding of non-true is really liberating path to Buddha or not, without any doubt, one should meditate on emptiness. I do not want to meditate upon emptiness because it frightens me. For the person, there would be some followers who may feel that way because of not having awakened his Buddha nature. They may feel fear. They may sort of generate fear when they hear this kind of non-true or not truly existent or like that. It would be correct to be afraid of that which actually produces suffering, the apprehension of true existence. Means it is appropriate to feel sort of fear towards one's own any concepts of truly grasping, which is the source of all the suffering, which is the source of all the suffering. But why be afraid of meditating on emptiness if it pacifies all kinds of sufferings? Okay. With this merit, may I attain omniscience and defeat the force of mental affliction. May all sentient beings be liberated from the ocean of samsara, which is disturbed by the strong waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. Just as Manjugosha knows all, so as Samandrabhadra does, may I follow all of them and dedicate all the merits. The place which becomes a supreme refuge, nourishing the northern ear, filled with oceans of scholars and saints, may the Sakya teachings which illuminate the teachings of the Buddha in the land of snow prosper.